Well, Jill Gabler, thank you so much for coming down to the studio.
Thank you, Holly. It's great to be here.
Just to start off, why are you running for re-election?
That's a good question. I truly have, it's been an honor serving this community and my district this past 4 years. And I have truly, I believe, become a trusted leader because I'm accessible. I really am a full-time representative who tries to represent my district. And I've tried to get things done that really support my community. It takes a couple years to really understand all that the city does. And it's more complicated than I guess I ever imagined. But a re-election really allows me to hit the ground running in my second term and really move forward with the things I'm already working on. And I'm just excited to move forward and get more things done to keep our community strong.
So how would you characterize District 5?
District 5 is really the center part of the city. It's a more established and older part of our community. I like to think of it as the bridge to all the other districts because it's right in the center and it touches all of the other districts. It is the one district that is not suburban mostly, and so I'd like to think of it as more of the established community members who've been here a long time, and they really love our community.
And how would you describe the people who live there, your constituencies?
I kind of already did, but I really think, you know, we're close to the core, and the closer you are to the core, the more engaged one seems to be. And so that as I am walking the neighborhoods and meeting my constituents, they all, to a person, seem pretty engaged. More of them know that there's an election going on, which is actually kind of surprising. And they are interested in what's going on in the community. They tend to be a little older. As I said, it is the older part of our city, but they are they're more interested in what's going on in the core of our city than I think a lot of the suburban areas are. And that is also a big passion of mine is creating a really vibrant downtown. And so they ask a lot about that, too, and how we can support the heart of our city.
So more engaged, more
yes.
involved. How long have you lived in that district?
I have lived in District 5 since 2010, so this is about 7 years.
And how long have you lived in Colorado Springs?
I've lived in Colorado Springs 17 years. I spent the previous decade up in Mountain Shadows area.
So what do you think is the most important issue facing our city right now?
I believe the most important and concerning issue is growth. And when I say that, it's more unsustainable type of growth. In my time on city council, I've really realized that we are a geographically enormous city of almost 200 square miles. And it's really hard for our city to maintain such a large geographic area with not enough density of people who are paying taxes. And so growth is inevitable. It's going to happen. And it's actually important for a city to continue to grow and thrive. But how we grow to be more sustainable and able to support ourselves self-sufficiently and sustainably is really important. And for me, that means that we quit annexing outward and growing greenfield. That's what they call that. And laying new lane miles of road, new utilities, while we can't maintain the existing infrastructure that we have. I led a committee here in the city called the Infill and Redevelopment Committee, and it finalized last year creating a new chapter of our comprehensive plan, which really focuses on reducing barriers to infill development. And that is the development of the third of our city that's inside that is currently undeveloped and redeveloping the areas that are maybe blighted or starting to move in that direction so that we can really focus on development on the inside of our city.
How do you discourage people from wanting to continue to develop new things on the outskirts? I mean, that seems like they have such momentum right now
right.
doing that. So how do you counteract that and encourage people to say, look what we already have in this one third that already exists?
Well, the city itself has a boundary, and anyone who owns land currently within the boundary has the ability to build. The city council is really the land use body of our city. And so we encourage development any place inside the city, but it is also our job to decide whether we annex any additional land. And it has kind of been an unwritten kind of recommendation that for now we focus on coming in and not annexing any new land. We make exceptions for what we call enclaves, areas that are inside the city that aren't currently part of Colorado Springs. But we do have the ability to not annex right now. And of course, the infill plan really did create recommendations that reduce those barriers to that infill development. Developers, I think, by and large, you know, they're acting in their own self-interest and they want to earn a profit and they're going to develop where it makes sense for them. And we just need to make it viable for them to develop inside the city.
Do you think there's an imbalance in the city between sales tax and property tax?
Well, Holly, of course I do. our city is very reliant upon sales tax. We currently receive about 8% of our revenue from property tax, but property tax is a much more stable way of receiving taxes. When there is any sort of economic downturn, people quit buying things, and so our sales tax immediately plummets. And that happened back in 2006, 2007. I served on the city's park board at that time before I was on council, and our budget in the parks department went from $18 million to about $3 million in a couple years. I found myself crying at meetings as we were turning off the water and not picking up trash because the city is so reliant on sales tax. However, every time the city does any sort of polling to the community about increasing taxes, by and large, the idea of increasing property tax is not an amenable solution to our constituents. And I don't know if it's just an education of them understanding what the issue is between sales and property tax, but they are always more amenable to increasing sales tax. And a lot of that has to do with their feeling that they control that in some way. They can buy less and that some of those tax burden is put on tourists and visitors who come here and that they're not the only ones paying it.
So how do you do that? How do you educate them or endeavor to change
that
mentality?
That is a really good question. And I think the city council and mayor have been trying to work together to do just that. I've heard the mayor around the community talking about that. But as you probably know, we did increase our sales tax temporarily for 5 years, 0.62 cents to maintain our roads. And we were able to get that done because the community supported it. The community trusted that we were going to use those additional tax dollars only for road maintenance, and they even wanted to see the list of roads we were going to work on. So it's important that trust is built, and that is the key component to having the constituency agree to give you more of their money. But I am not sure how we get the community to understand that. I like to point to other cities like Fort Collins. We by and large compare ourselves to Fort Collins. They are a similar city who is really thriving and bringing young professionals to their community because they are not only supporting their community and roads and infrastructure, but they are really supporting the kind of amenities our young educated workforce wants, which is of course transit and multimodal kinds of transportation, a really vibrant downtown. Of course, it's a kind of a hip college town. And if we want to be like some of these comp cities, we need to start trying to find ways to fund the things we want to pay for.
And on a related note, going forward, how do we deal with the ratchet down effect of Tabor?
That's a good question, too. I mean, Tabor was, is the law of the land, and there are some really good aspects to it. I think it is important that we go to the people when we want to take more of their hard-earned dollars. But the ratchet down effect is difficult, and I think I heard recently that we are only allowed to grow 2.5% this next year or this in 2016. And we grew much, much more than that. So we are coming back to the taxpayers on the April ballot to ask to keep some of the revenue that the city has received to use for stormwater infrastructure. But it is a conversation. And I think that a great many of our community do support de-tabering, as we call it, to get rid of that aspect of Tabor. And so I think we will be able to move forward with that, and the hope is to get that maybe moved to a ballot in the next couple of years.
And I'm interested in what you said about having the experience and having learned so much in your previous term, and how if, you know, new people are going to have to go through a process of relearning, and that takes a while. So can you talk a little bit more about what you've learned throughout this time and why you think that that it's better to continue from here rather than having to start over with someone new?
Well, I mean, it's a great conversation for an incumbent, of course, because I have been here. Of course, when I was running the first time, I was all about fresh perspectives and bringing someone new in. So I do come with that complete understanding that I felt differently 4 years ago. However, the city council really does a lot in this community. As you may know, we are also the board of directors of our Forest Service utility. And it's a big job. And if you're doing it well, you really are working full time. I could spend half my time just responding to emails and calls from constituents. And that is, of course, not something that you need a lot of experience to do, but you do need to be an empathetic and compassionate person and really devote the time to do that. But there are just so many issues throughout the city, and you spend about the first year really trying to comprehend and understand the various functions of a city council member, and then you really start to figure out which of those issues you're passionate about, which ones you really want to focus your energies on, because you can't care about everything. And so part of it is that I have already gone through that process of really, I had a lot of people come to me that my first year and tell me what they care about. And that is, of course, what every person does when there's a new council member. They know that person is a blank slate, and they want them to care about what they care about. And I came out of that first year with some real energies towards certain and specific issues that I'm still working on today. And we have accomplished a lot, but there's still a lot of work to be done that I would like to accomplish in these next 4 years. And so I think to that extent, it really does help if in fact you are really moving forward the issues that your constituents care about.
As you know, Mayor John Southers often refers to the fact that we're the 40th biggest city in the country, and we need to be acting like it. How do you think we can do that?
Well, I think that, of course, the first thing that comes to my head, and we were 41st last year, so we've moved up a slot, but we pay our city council members $6,250 a year. And although I am grateful and honored to be in this position, I think people don't really realize sometimes that we're a big city, and we have big city issues that require competent leaders overseeing those issues. And I am not going to say that your current council members aren't competent. They are. They are mostly, by and large, retired military officers. They're good people. I also served 7 years as an Air Force officer. I didn't retire. And I am currently, at 50 years old, the youngest person on our city council. And so what that speaks to is we deny a certain demographic in our community the ability to serve because they cannot afford to give up their current job. And so the voice is not being heard from mostly our young community members like yourself. But even bigger than that, we are a big city, and I think we need to honor that fact by paying our leaders well so that we can ensure we're getting the best quality of leaders. Denver, for instance, is really not that much bigger than us. They're about 750,000. Their land mass is half of ours. They have 13 council members, and they pay them very well. They all have a big staff. And I don't think that we need to go anywhere like that, but I think we're a big city, and I think that is probably the biggest thing that we could do to really to support our leaders and help them to be better leaders for our entire community.
Jill Gabler, thank you so much for coming in.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you, Holly.